This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Stretched by Torres, the set, the kick, and the pitch. It's deep to left field. This one may be off the wall, maybe in the screen.
Lang and Chernyshev on top as expected. They're eligible for Salt Lake City.
Indian All-Star.
All right, Bill Black here with the Indian All-Stars podcast, and it is my distinct honor to be speaking with Melissa Skeet today, a native athlete and activist, doing a really, really important piece of creating awareness. And before I hack up the whole introduction, I'll turn it over to Melissa. Thank you again for coming on, and I'd love to talk to you about what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Yep, Melissa Ski, Yat A to all those who are listening. Thank you so much for having me on this podcast. I'm originally from the Navajo Nation, grew up at the Grand Canyon National Park. It's a very small town. And my res basically was right next door over in Cameron, Arizona, where my mom is basically from. And my dad's side is from Gallup, New Mexico. And after growing up in Grand Canyon National Park for about 17, 18 years, moved out to Flagstaff, Arizona, and lived there for a long while. And got my undergrad over at NAU, so Northern Arizona University. And then just started my career in victim assistance. That's kind of where I got my passion in just being, I'm just trying to, wanting to help people. So that kind of allowed me to network and, you know, just kind of see what I'd like to do further in victim assistance. So I basically was a victim advocate working with different folks who just had the worst day of their lives. From, you know, victims of, gosh, sexual assault, domestic violence, human trafficking, sex trafficking, all the pretty bad cases.
Yeah, boy.
Or should I say the bad crimes, you know, stuff. So this, you know, led into something bigger later down the road, but I decided to move up north towards like Wyoming, Montana, Idaho area. And that, before that, actually, I got into roller derby, which was a sport that's kind of overlooked still to this day.
Sure.
And yeah, so this sport was actually something, you know, something that I feel till this day is probably the most challenging and hardest sport I have ever competed in. And it started, gosh, I think it was like in 2015, I tried out for the team, and that kind of just, I just had a fell in love with it. Some people, I get this question a lot of who brought you into roller derby or how did you get into it? And
yeah, I was going to ask that. So
during my advocacy work, as a victim advocate, I started working with this attorney, and she was just this like amazing individual who would come in with, you know, like court outfit, like court gear, like not the gear, but, you know, business outfit. And she would come into court just with, you know, different colored hair that was coming down from behind her ear. She had different color fingernails, but she presented herself so freaking well, like as a strong, empowering woman within the courtroom, and she just dominated. So outside of the courtroom, she was just herself and just this amazing person with so much energy. And I was like, I want to know more about this person. What does she do? So that's when I asked her, like, what do you do outside of work? She's like, oh, I actually play roller derby. I was like, wow. So she invited me to a roller derby game, also known as a bout. And I went there and saw just how amazing these roller derby athletes are and or were and are. And I just decided, like, this is pretty cool. Like, I think I want to try out for the team. So I did. Made the team after a 3-month tryout session. So that you have to literally pass a 3-month training process.
Okay.
So
did you skate before? Were you an avid roller skater or?
I started inline skating at a young age, or some people know it as rollerblading.
Yeah.
And yeah, I started at a young age, and that was, I think my mom did that, like gave me a set of rollerblades just so I can get out on the outside, sure, outdoors, and just do something in the summertime. So I did that growing up, but then I never ever, my feet have never laid or been in a boot, as in like a roller skating boot. So okay, not until I started competing in roller derby.
Wow.
So yeah, roller skating is a lot different than rollerblading or inline skating. I have to say it's probably a lot harder. It's kind of hard to explain, you know, if those who haven't been on like roller blades or roller skates, but roller derby is one sport that has brought in, so for me, just like kind of just welcomed me and included me into this league. And to me, it's a family. It was a family that I grew close to, and it was just the family dynamics of it that I just fell in love with. And that kind of led to trail skating, and trail skating is just getting out on the outdoors and skating on any terrain. But of course you want the smooth type of terrain. So that's what I try to look for. Putting
that's
on
something
your
I'd never heard of until I read the article talking about your current efforts and trail skating. Tell me a little bit more about that. I mean, you just go find a trail and go for it, or?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of just stems from different trails that have really good terrain, of course, mm-hmm, safe terrain, and roads, even roads sometimes too. I like the roads more than I do like the trails, but of course, a lot of the drivers sometimes don't like some random person roller skating on the road. So yeah, I got into trail skating when I moved up towards Wyoming, and I lived in this place called the Grand Tetons National Park.
Sure.
And they have a really nice trail there. And I just decided one day to put on my skates, put on my headphones, and, you know, like just a pack or something, and just go skate on this trail. And it's just, it opened up my eyes a bit more. It was very empowering to me. I felt stronger. I felt free. It just felt so good to be out in the outdoors, skating with wildlife, skating with sunshine, feeling the breeze on your face. And I fell in love with it, and I wanted more of it.
What a gift to be able to find that. I mean, that's really awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. And then I decided, well, actually, first, I saw one of my friends who used to actually compete with High Altitude Roller Derby, which is the team that I joined back in Flagstaff, Arizona, where roller derby started for me. And her name is Daisy Purdy. She actually was my peer advisor when I was going to school at NAU for my undergrad. And she's the main reason why I graduated from college. And I saw her one day on the news, roller skating across the nation. And she was doing it for a different indigenous cause. And I realized that I wanted to do something similar. So I just decided to one day, like, I'm just going to go and put on some skates and roller skate across the Navajo Nation. So I brought this idea up to my fiance and I said, hey, what do you think about this idea? And he just went up to me and high-fived me and said, let's do it. And he
That's
was
awesome.
Actually the main person. Yeah, he was the main person who kept me going on, you know, and making sure that we get this done and actually do it, because I wanted to back out so many times because I thought it was crazy. And my main mission was to bring awareness to MMIP. And I wanted to do this through roller skating, because roller skating, I wanted to share my journey of healing, because during the time that I was competing in roller derby, I was a victim of domestic violence and almost lost my life in the hands of the abuser. So I almost became a statistic myself of MMIP. And I don't think any person should be named as a statistic within MMIP and to be known as just, you know, their actual full name. So I decided to kind of combine the two. And while I'm roller skating, people will ask, why roller skating? Because it brought healing to me, and it's my healing journey that I like to empower others and hopefully inspire others to go outside and do something that is meaningful to you. And because roller skating saved my life, roller derby saved my life, and it was the family dynamics of it that saved my life, because it took me out of this dark space, because I almost got into alcoholism. So it was just this sport that was so empowering for me. And then it kind of led into this amazing journey and this amazing mission, because when I roller skated 192 miles across the Navajo Nation.
Wow.
And a documentary was created out of it. So anybody, just check it out. It's on YouTube. And it, during this time, I decided, like, maybe this kind of got out there. Like, we brought some more attention to MMIP. And it just, to me, it felt like it was still overlooked and nobody was really talking about it. So I decided, okay, well, I'll just roller skate across the country. And
as you do.
Yeah. And I was like, let's just see. And I, you know, brought this up to my fiance and said, what do you think? He's like, okay, let's do it. You know, just kind of like, shoot. And we decided to just do it and go for it. And we planned for 2 years. And it was hard to just turn down a lot of upcoming events with anybody else, like especially for family. And I'm like, no, we can't be there because we have this big event that we need to, you know, we need to do. It's important. So we decided to start from Washington State and roller skate all the way to Washington, D.C. And given that we did and completed the 192-mile skate, it was really hard to roller skate every inch of a mile. And I say this because the terrain sometimes is not my best friend, or anybody who roller skates on any like bumpy terrain's best friend, because I have come across the worst terrain where it's extremely bumpy that I would roller skate on it for about 22 miles, which is like a few hours straight. Mm-hmm. And it would be so bumpy to the point that my vision would just go out of whack, where I could not focus or see straight because my eyes were just, you know, really blurry, or it was bumpy. I don't know what that's called.
Being on the bumpy.
Boy. Yeah. Stagnant or something like that. Yeah. And it took like over an hour or so for my vision to come back. So I was like, this is not going to be ideal. Like, I'll try, let's call this actually a tour. So my fiance Nate and I were like, you know, let's call it a tour because we're going to visit different areas across the nation and roller skate with the red handprint on. Uh-huh. And bring awareness to others who have no idea what we're doing, because I swear I have gotten looks that many just are so confused, but even that confusion can take them to their phone, to Google, and search, what does the red handprint on a person's face mean?
What
and
is this all about? Them,
yeah, and it leads them directly to so many resources to MMIP. So, I mean, that's all it takes. And I've met with some families who've been affected by MMIP, heard their stories, listened to them, talk about it on articles. Like I've talked about one, it's hashtag Micah Matters. And this is a case out in Missoula, Montana. And her mom, Carissa Heavy Runner, is fighting for her daughter's case because her daughter was actually killed in a hit and run. And the justice system wasn't really focusing on her case. So I talk about these cases, and even in Elle Magazine, I was just, there's an article in Elle Magazine about my story as well. There's, you know, I talk about it in other podcast interviews, and we talk about, you know, of course I always get consent from the family members to talk about their stories. Just wanting to get it out there a bit more of like, this is one case out of thousands right now.
Right.
And, you know, murder is the third leading cause of death on Native women. And the grassroots movement of MMIW is being more inclusive towards other cases, meaning it's, you know, MMIP, missing and murdered Indigenous persons, because it includes the elders, elderly, LGBTQ and Two-Spirit, as well as children and men. So there's many cases out there. Of course, you know, we're focusing on women and also others who have, you know, families who have been affected by this. So I see this when, you know, given that we are literally right now at the end of our tour, where we have visited different areas across the nation, even areas where we have seen the Confederate flag, we've come across, you know, law enforcement officers who absolutely did not like what we were doing.
Wow.
Others who just look at us in disgust, and areas where we were unsafe because we were almost hit by a tornado, or the humidity almost made me pass out at you know, certain times when I'm roller skating. So given all of this pain and all the tears that I've shed, all the meltdowns and all of the exhaustion does not even add up to what the families go through on a daily basis. So people ask me, like, what is it that keeps you motivated? I've been asked this so many times on this, on this tour. I'm like, it's the families. It's the moms. It's the dads. It's the cousins. Or it's the, you know, like the nieces or nephews, whoever, fighting for their family member to make sure that their stories are being heard or their stories are being talked about. And, you know, shedding light on just these cases right now that need the utmost attention. And that's what, you know, keeps me going, is this, just their energy and how much they empower me to just, you know, their strength that they just keep going every single day, fighting and fighting and fighting. And that's what keeps me going. Yeah.
That is some powerful stuff, driving you. And, you know, I'm almost at a loss for words to try and say how impressed I am with your dedication to that, because it, like you said, it hasn't been easy. And to find out that you ran into some resistance, it's not like you're protesting something. I don't get what that would be about, right? I mean, man, that's hard to believe in this day and age.
Yeah, we've gotten pushback. We've gotten negativity. We've gotten some haters. We've gotten some social media trolls, and, you know, from all over. And there are times that, you know, or, you know, during this tour, I even lost my job. You know, I don't know how many times I've gotten the whole, like, wow, so how do you take time out to do this from work? You must have a lot of money to do this. I'm like, actually, we don't.
No.
And I lost my job, and my fiance has been working every single day, like sometimes late at night until 1 or 2 in the morning to get his work done, and he still continues on the next day. And I'm like okay, let's keep going. We got this. You know, we both have each other's energy that we rely on, and our two dogs are here because we are. Some people did not like the fact that we brought our dogs, and that some of the donations that we are receiving goes to our dogs. So some people were like, "I just donated to you, and you're telling me that it's going to dog food? Are you serious?" So I, you know,
I
the thing
saw
is,
one of
like,
them peeking over your shoulder there. So,
yeah, you did.
yeah.
He's our attention whore dog. Like he just needs attention like every 2 seconds. Yeah. So, yeah, and like people just don't understand. And I'm like, well, you know, we have our GoFundMe link. It's been transparent since day one, which I posted like last year, November. And it has that our dogs are coming with us because we are not going to put them in a kennel or have them stay with a stranger for 2 to 3 months. Like that's just torture for our dogs. And right now they've been having the utmost, you know, most adventurous time traveling to different areas. Yes, they
Sure.
do get exhausted than we do, but you know, it's they're like our kids. And you know, I think too, what stirred up some folks was that this wasn't a typical, you know, skate every inch of a mile to deserve donations. And, you know, I called it a tour for a reason. But there has been that resistance, like you said. And even some folks who don't see this as important and see this as like, oh, it's just some roller skater coming in through town. You know, I guess we'll do something, but, you know, there's not a lot of energy put into it. So we get those. You know, the feeling from others that it's just not important to them. I'm like, okay, if this isn't important to you, then we don't need to waste our time. We can go elsewhere and make, you
Right.
know, the awareness there. So when we hit the Midwest, it was hard. It started to get harder. And we camp all like, well, basically every single night to the point where in the beginning it was hard because we were trying to adjust. And then we got, you know, we got a little bit of like a routine down and to the point where we could put up our tent within like less than 10 minutes, you know, and get all of our stuff, you know, where it needs to be set. And, you know, it became just this like automatic routine.
Sure.
And then when we have folks like hosts come and, or actually like get in touch with me saying, hey, why don't you stay at our place? And it's like either their house or it's a, an, not an apartment, but like a RV of theirs to stay in. We're like, this is so weird to actually have a roof over our head. We don't know how to respond. And, you know, having a shower, we were getting used to just not showering for days, like to the point where I was like, what's in my hair? And what's that? I've never seen that there. And it's just like certain things that we were just not used to, just our bodies adapting to this strenuous part of this journey.
Sure.
And even my legs were just starting to, in the beginning, they were in pain and they were swelling so bad
I bet.
from all of the miles that, you know, I was putting in. But it was so cool to see how my body was just adjusting to where it's like, okay, I think I need to build a little bit of cushion of muscle here in your legs to protect it. Let me go ahead and do that for your calves. Let me go ahead and do that for your knees so you don't suffer. So I started to get stronger in my legs that I could
Sure.
feel it on every skate. And some folks were like, how are your legs? How's your knees? Are they suffering right now? I'm like, actually, no, they actually are really, really strong. And if anything, the only thing that was hard for me, and I guess you can say I was suffering, it was the weather. And it was the humidity that was actually kicking my butt at certain points of time to where, again, I almost passed out.
Sure. It's a whole
Yeah.
different type of hydration dealing with crazy humidity, isn't it?
It, yeah. Yeah. So that's when we have, you know, within my pack, I wear this pack, which is about 15 pounds. And the water is filled with sodium citrate, which is electrolytes because I'm sweating so much.
Sure.
And then I have these two bottles on both sides on my chest where it's full of carb. and all it is just the cheapest way, which was sugar and water and mixed in with a little bit of sodium citrate with electrolytes. So I would drink one of those every hour. If I was going for about, you know, 2 to 3 hours or so, I'd have like three of them on me at times. And then if I usually I can always tell because my body, I can tell I was starting to adjust with what it needed on every skate. So if my stomach was hurting so bad, I knew that I needed to get some sort of solid nutrition in. So I would have like protein bars on me. I'll eat that while I'm skating. And that made a huge difference every single time. If I got a migraine afterwards, I knew that I was overworking my body. If I just felt overly exhausted afterwards, I was overworking my body. So I went from skating about 30 miles to just going down, like decreasing it a little bit more, because it was just, my body was like, you need to calm down. Like, this is, this is, you're overworking yourself and you're going to pay for it afterwards if you don't chill out.
Sure. So,
yeah. Had to listen to my body at times.
Well, all of this is going to make you that much more of a kick butt roller derby player when you get back. I'm just kidding.
I'm actually retired. I'm retired. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you might come back and have a comeback tour, and
you're right.
But I'm,
I don't know how many times people are like, "Are you retired?" I'm like, "Yes, I am." They're like, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "I don't know." I love roller derby, like, you know, but I just, the injuries is what kind of pushed me away, because I had a bad concussion from roller derby. Yeah. And since then, my skating hasn't been the same since then. I'm more like fearful on certain things.
Sure.
Yeah.
I was just joking a little bit, but building that strength is, that's really a cool thing. So one thing I wanted to find out is, after going through this whole thing and you're at the tail end of the tour, what's the biggest thing that you personally have gained from this?
Oh, it's funny. My fiance and I had this conversation yesterday
really?
At dinner. Yeah. And he had some good feedback and all. And mainly it's just, even though we were getting some pushback, and even though we've been laughed at, you know, I had a person laugh in my face and walk off mid-sentence of me trying to explain to him what this was or is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's this, it was discouraging, because this didn't get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it didn't get a lot of attention. I have been declined by so many different businesses and companies that you wouldn't think would actually decline what we're doing. And some have told us, this is too newsy. This is something that we just don't work on, or this is, no, we're not interested in what you're doing. And it sucked, because you later kind of get used to the rejection, you get used to the ghosting, you get used to being ignored, and you get used to being like, is this just not taken seriously, because people don't think that roller skating is an actual sport, because it's seen more as like a playful, childlike type of thing.
Yeah, recreation, hobby thing, sure.
Exactly. And so I wanted to do this mainly because I wanted to show that it's not what that stereotype is. It's more than that. It's, you know, wearing about 5-ish pounds of weight on each leg with 15 pounds of a pack on top of it, you know, on your torso, and then just going for miles at a time. But also it's hard, but it challenges me. But it's so rewarding in the end, because, you know, my body's like, wow, like, this is awesome. Because you're also feeling, you know, the healing part and aspect of it, where I am just so free in the moment, because at times I'll be by myself for hours. And when I'm by myself for hours, sorry if you hear the siren in the background.
Uh-oh.
There's like a truck going by us in a minute.
You haven't been parked in a no parking zone for too long, have you?
I know. There he goes. Okay. Yeah, and I have to remind myself at the end of this that we did bring awareness to different folks across the nation, even if it felt like we didn't. And, you know, for those who did listen to my story, you know, Elle Magazine picked it up, and that was really cool to listen to, like, wow, like a domestic violence survivor, now, you know, ultra trail skater, who, you know, also speaking about it, you know, like doing different speaking events and all of that, and just being able to share the story and touching different folks all over the nation is what happened. even though it doesn't feel like it, but it did. So I think personally for me, what I have gotten out of this is just the fact that I have touched others. I have empowered others. I have been able to, feel accomplished, even though at times I'm like, we didn't reach our GoFundMe link or our donation amount, which was $50,000, because we partnered with an indigenous nonprofit organization, and they're called Okomi Forensics. And Okomi Forensics is based out of Missoula, Montana, and they help out within the forensic investigation process of these cases, of these criminal cases of MMIP.
Oh, wow.
And they actually go out and do participate in searches for families. So they, each search costs about like $3,000.
Sure.
About $3,000 to $4,000. And we wanted to make sure that they got, the funding that they needed. But for them, we didn't reach, I think like maybe tops about $5,000 for them. And it's disheartening because we wanted more people to reach out. We had Kaylee Reese, Afro-Indigenous, actress and world champion boxer, try to help promote us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other actors and actresses reach out and say, we'll help you out. But it still didn't go anywhere. We had people who wanted to help and then drop like flies. We just don't know what happened to them. They just didn't want to help us out anymore. We're like,
okay. Yeah.
And it's just, I have to remember after all of that is that I am now stronger. I am now, even physically, but also emotionally, mentally. And I think our entire team right now is just so overall just stronger. And feel like we have accomplished so much, even though we feel like we didn't, even though we didn't make our donation amount, still we did. We did so much, especially seeing different areas. Of course, I'm sure we stirred up some folks who recognized the Confederate flag and our Trump supporters and didn't like what we were doing. But we made things happen around those areas.
You can talk about the, you missed your financial goal, but you gave that organization $5,000 they didn't have before. So, we can all have lofty goals, but if we take the win. So good for you guys. That is, I'm sure that every penny of that $5,000 will be well used. So
thank you. That means a lot.
Certainly. Kind of got goosebumps on that, even though you might have missed what you think is your target. I think that's still a great accomplishment.
So, thank you. Yeah.
So after all this and all the tour, and by the way, I'm sorry I missed you being here in OMAC. I didn't even see any information about the event that they had at 12 Tribes up there. So
no worries. A lot of this stuff was last minute and we kind of did that on purpose because some people were like, why do you got to do it that way? You're not going to meet so many people, but it was for safety purposes. If we, said publicly of where we're going to be every step of, every state or every city.
Sure.
A lot of people don't like what we're doing. This awareness is so different than like breast cancer awareness or bringing awareness for mental health.
That's so strange. But that is the case. There's such an animosity with that. I remember when this the whole thing kind of started with the I've forgotten her name and I'm sorry, the track girl came out.
Oh yeah, Rosalie Fish.
Yeah. When that came out, it was such an uproar about that. And
yeah,
I didn't get it then. I don't get it now. So, okay. I can understand that a little bit, but I'm still disappointed that I missed it. So,
we live in Washington State, so I'm pretty sure we'll be back in the OMAC area.
Great. Yeah. Well, I'd love to catch up with you somewhere down the road.
Definitely.
So you're on the last leg of this, the tail end of the tour. When that's wrapped up, what's next?
Yeah, I mean, Honestly, I've been asked by some skateboarders who I've skated with about a year ago for bringing awareness to MMIP. It was a commemorative skate for the Yakima tribe in Washington State. And we might do a skate together again for a case out, I believe, in Yakima. And there's a couple of other events. I'll be doing some speaking events coming up and for next year for Women's History Month. I still want to proceed on with my mission. And I do, you know, some folks are like, are you turning this into a nonprofit? I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Right.
And right now we're working on a website so people can come on to our website. We're working on hopefully getting merch available to people to, I like to bring forward more merch about roller skating and smudge or roller skating and tea, you know, and I created a coloring book actually not too long ago, and it was funds were actually going to help our tour out, but you know, there's so much going on, but it's called Roller Skate and Tea Volume 1, available on Amazon.
Hey, excellent.
And the reason why it's called that is because I'm a tea drinker and I can't drink coffee. It's just gross to me. I have no hate to any coffee drinkers. I'm just like, ugh.
Well, I'll put this away then.
Tea. But, so I think afterwards too, I still want to, first of all, I want to relax for probably like a week or so. But I think in general, my fiance and I are like, I know we're going to try to relax, but I think we're going to have a hard time just relaxing and sitting still because we've been on the go, go, go for the past 2.5 months. I'm like, I know, how are we going to sit down? So I think it's just in general, just, you know, getting some really good self-care in time for both of us.
Sure.
And my fiance actually has a big XC event, which is called Hole in the Wall for Washington State. So a lot of team, like cross country teams from all over the country come out and compete at this event. So he's yeah, he helps out with that. So I feel like, yes, we have relaxation coming in, but at the same time, we're like, oh, we still have this. So, well, yeah. We'll see.
All right.
That's a plan.
Well, we're running up against time on this. And so if I can ask you, send me the links to your website. And well, I think I have your website, but your GoFundMe and the, and your coloring book. I'd love to be able to plug that a little bit. That's fun. I'm a high school art teacher. So
Perfect. Okay.
I'm all about the art stuff. So, as a matter of fact, I'm in my classroom right now doing this interview.
Awesome.
So as we wrap it up, is there, I ripped this off from Dan Rather in his big interview show, but is there anything that I didn't ask you that I wish I would have, or is there anything that we didn't touch on that you wanted to say in the last minute and a half?
No, I mean, honestly, yeah. So we're still working on our website, you know, to be continuing on that. But, you know, a lot of the information that I have is actually on my Instagram page. And I literally have posted about every single day, highlighting every single day. And I'm pretty transparent about a lot of stuff that we've gone through from day one. And so people can definitely follow my Instagram by going to @skeet_fighter. And that's my roller derby name, and I use it on my mission. And I do have a Facebook as well as a TikTok. I don't post as much on TikTok. I wish I did, but I'm going to be working on some episodes on YouTube, hopefully shortly. I was supposed to do that a long time ago, but we had some people drop out like flies, and that didn't happen, but that's okay. Yeah, just stay tuned. I mean, people have questions. I'm always happy to try to answer them as, you know, quick as possible. I think that's it. Yeah, I think you covered a lot of it.
Well, thanks again for taking the time to talk with me, and thank you even more for doing what you've been doing, because that's not only is it a grueling effort, but it's a message that needs to be spread far and wide. So again, congratulations, and honored to talk to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Uh-oh. Class is starting.
Let you go then.
I got to go put on my teacher hat again.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, Melissa. Thank you again.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.